You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
The views expressed by any host or any guest on the Prairie Punk House Companion are the personal views or opinions of the people who express them and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone else on the show or any company, employer, or any other organization that the individual expressing them has or will affiliate with in the past, present, or future. Hi everyone, you're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion. We're now on episode 13. I am Neckbone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear. Did you say 13?
I did.
Lucky 13?
This is lucky 13. Should we have skipped this one and gone straight to 14?
No. No.
Yeah. Are you saying that because the whole lucky number thing is nonsense?
No.
No.
It's true. Because I just got a raise. I just got a bonus. I just got a new car. Everything's coming up Milhouse.
It's all because of 13.
Our episode 13, yeah. That's why.
Cool. Uh-huh. We should probably start a cult.
Thanks to Prairie Punk House Companion for the 13th episode and, you know, getting me a raise and a bonus and a new car. What else? My daughter got a job.
Nice.
Yeah, she's keeping the family tradition of working at Taco Bell alive.
Not the coal mine? Got her at Taco Bell?
No. Yeah, we tried to send her to the salt mines, but she's already too salty. So.
Oh, yeah.
They wouldn't hire her.
Well, that's awesome. And pretty soon we'll be writing a book called The Lucky Number 13, The Secret of the Number 13, and starting our own cult. So everybody please join that.
It'll be based around some of the Pythagoras mythology or whatever you call it. You know,
yeah.
The Pythagoreans and their cult.
I did try to start a cult I called Oceanography. And it's based on the teachings of Billy Ocean about how you should get out of my dreams and into my car.
You! Get into my car. When one time we were at Disney World for vacation, and would you like to guess who was playing at the Epcot Outdoor Theater?
Was it Billy Ocean?
It was. It was Billy Ocean.
Nice. Did he play Caribbean Queen too?
I don't know. We walked by. As we walked by, though, I yelled, "Hey, you, get into my car."
Did he oblige?
I don't think he heard me.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of far away.
Either that or he did hear you, and he was like, "That motherfucker."
Good one. Never heard that before.
It's like, I'm going to go find that guy and punch him later. And I would have to defend him because he is the messiah of my religion. So sorry, dude.
Yeah. Is that what is the tenets of your religion?
Pretty much, I think we're just going to copy and paste Scientology, but rename it Oceanography and make Billy Ocean our Jesus.
Gotcha.
Just so we can release all the secrets of Scientology. Also, you don't have to pay anything to be part of us. So you get it for free.
So instead of thetans, stick with me here. Mm-hmm. Instead of thetans, you should call them Caribbean Queens.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or that could be the upcoming messiah that we're waiting for to replace Billy Ocean as the Caribbean Queen. No?
Maybe Hall & Oates.
Okay. Are they...
You get some more Yacht Rock going there.
We'll just filter through, let's kind of rotate through all the Yacht Rock guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't forget Greg Graffin's Yacht Rock record, American
Right,
Vision.
Greg Graffin. We can center religion around Greg Graffin, but only specifically Greg Graffin from that one record.
His Yacht Rock record.
The rest. We also recognize as one of the Lesser Gods, Bad Religion's prog rock album that they had. Nothing else.
Yes. Let's do that. And Discharge's butt rock album. Yeah. Where's Johnny at? I know he'll appreciate that one.
Speaking of Colts, I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit to when we first got to Kansas City, 1999, because I completely forgot a story.
Yeah, you got to tell that story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because also, don't forget, we were listening to a lot of Angel Dust.
Yes, we were.
The Faith and War record.
Yeah.
And there are quotes from that.
Yes, yes, there are.
In that record. I'll let you tell the story, but just don't forget about Faith No More.
Oh, I would never forget.
Because that's when it, like, struck home with you what was going on.
I was like, holy shit.
It was delicious.
That's what those lyrics are? Never. I just thought Mike Patton was a fucking weirdo. Which
I mean, he is.
He is, but still.
You should also tell the story about working on set with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I did. I worked on a movie with Mike Patton. Or...
And Karen Black.
I was PA. I was a PA, which means I was just like a nobody. So it's not like I was like
coffee for him,
rubbing elbows with them, and like hanging out after work and shit. But yeah, so 1999.
You were desperate for a job.
Desperate for a job. Absolutely desperate. And I'm walking around. This is before you get online and look for a job. This is before you got your LinkedIns and your Monsters and. All those Indeeds and whatnot.
You had a newspaper.
Yep, you'd get the newspaper and you would just sit there and like circle shit. Like I'm sure the younger people, you've seen it in movies before probably. That's like a real thing that we fucking did. So I was just walking up and down Broadway in Kansas City, Missouri, just kind of wandering into businesses that were walking distance from our apartment. And I saw one and it was called a bookstore. And I was like, fuck, I like books. I like books. I work at a fucking bookstore. Like, and I had this whole like idea of like, yeah, I'm going to get the job at this bookstore and read all the books I want. And I'm going to like, you know, there's going to be, you know, my, you know, manic pixie dream girl with glasses working there that I'm going to meet, you know, the whole like all the dumb
very
shit.
Bohemian.
Right. All the dumb shit that goes through a 20-year-old's head. You know, and so like, I'm like, yeah, sweet. Yeah. I want to work at a fucking bookstore. I walk in and I was like, this is not like the bookstores I'm used to. And somebody comes up to me, they're all very nicely dressed. And they say, I asked them, I said, hey, can I apply for a job here? And they said, well, let's do one thing at a time. first we would like you to read some literature, and they gave me a little something, you know, a little pamphlet, and they're like, we'd like to set up an auditing session with you. And I was like, oh, like an interview? And they're like, it's kind of like an interview. And I was like, oh, dope. I must have been in there for 20 minutes at least before it kind of dawned on me. I was like, oh, fuck, this is a cult. This isn't a bookstore. And I found out later, I had never heard of them at the time, but I found out later that building was owned by the Church of Scientology, and I had been in a Scientologist, quote-unquote, bookstore.
And you hadn't heard of Scientology at that point?
No, no,
I never
heard
of it.
Know
that... Motherfucker, you were from Wichita, and you went to East High.
Yeah.
Like, less than a mile away from your high school was Kirstie Alley's house, which was also a major recruiting point for Scientologists.
Yeah,
like,
but
I used to walk from East High to my mom's work for summer school when I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. And I walked right by there and I was like, Scientology, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
And by that point I already knew what Scientology was, but
yeah,
that's wild. You didn't know what it was.
I didn't know. I thought I was like, well, I saw that there was Dianetics and Scientology written all over stuff. And I was like, oh, I thought it was just like some dumb hippie bookstore. It sounded like some hippie shit to me. I was like, oh, they probably like crystals or some shit. I don't know. Whatever. I need a fucking job. And so, yeah, it took me a little while to figure out like, oh, no, this is an actual cult. And then I later found out what Scientology was. But no, I grew up really sheltered. I grew up Roman Catholic. We didn't talk about other religions.
Fair enough.
Other religions, well, there's two religions to Roman Catholics. There's Catholics, and everyone else in the world is a Protestant.
Right.
Yeah, that includes atheists, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, agnostics.
It's kind of like
they're all Protestants. They're just fucking Protestants, right?
It's kind of like how all the people that aren't Amish are English.
Right. Sean is no bond English.
So you came home. I remember when you came home from that and you were laughing about it and you were like, yeah, they wanted to interview me. And, what did you say? You didn't say audit that time. You were like counseling. You called it counseling. Like,
yeah,
I have to do counseling. And then, you know, if I'm there long enough, I'll do counseling on other people too. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then, you were like, yeah. And they asked some of the questions from, the Faith No More. I don't remember which song.
Yeah. Oh shit.
I'm does emotional actually, music have quite an effect on you?
I'm going to look that up. Angel. It's the first song on the album Angel Dust. Pretty sure. Oh shit. It's just bringing up the drug Angel Dust. Damn it.
It's not Midlife Crisis.
Nah. It's, there we go. Faith No More. Angel Dust. Come on. What's the first track?
We listened to that all the time back then.
Damn it. Just give me a track listing. Why is this so difficult?
Do I need to do it?
Land of Sunshine.
Yeah, okay.
Land of Sunshine, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, straight out of Scientology looking brainwashing. I almost said mindwashing.
No, go if you've never heard that song, and even if you have heard that song but haven't heard it in a while, go listen to that track. It's also that whole album is really good top to bottom. I think it still is.
Such a good record.
Yeah. Let's see. What was that fucking? Oh, Firecracker. That was the movie. That was the movie. Firecracker.
The movie you PA'd for.
Yeah. So in 2005,
maybe we should do a book movie review.
Firecracker. I think we need to.
Yeah.
We've got to do it now.
I really hate the way that Ginger brought Mike Patton his coffee.
I don't even know. Sucks. I don't even know if I'm listed in the fucking credits. Probably not. Maybe I'll start an IMDb page since I've
Do you have IMDb page?
for a PA'd on a movie, I was in a short film, a local film in Kansas City that I called First Date.
Nice.
So I was an extra on a TV show called Power Book 4, : Force.
Sweet.
I played Sounds photographer really number one. Yeah, you might be able to see me next season. Not giving any spoilers away, but keep your eyes open for photographer number one in some episode. I don't even know which episode.
Wait, I thought you said you were four.
No, I was I'm number one photographer, baby.
Your first chair photographer?
First chair. Hell yeah. I was the only one there who actually worked as a photographer in the past. So I'm the real deal.
Oh, yeah. You brought some reality to
I
the
did.
Role. Yeah. You really put yourself into that.
It's true. It's like when Arlie Ermey played the drill sergeant and he really had been one. I was actually a photographer. Yeah. I'm basically Arlie Ermey, but less Republican. Firecracker was the film I PA'd on in 2005. It was from the only semester I went to the University of Missouri, Kansas City. UMKC for short. I took a film class. What's that?
You were a kangaroo?
For one semester, yes.
For one semester? Nice.
Yep. And I took a film production class. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we did for that class was we needed to go PA for a movie, which is a pretty tall order in Kansas City. And so I got a job as a PA working on this movie called Firecracker, being shot out in Wamego, Kansas. And if you know anything Wamego. About Kansas geography, Wamego is near Manhattan, Kansas. So that's about a 3-hour drive from Kansas City, like 2.5-3 hours each way. So, and it paid nothing. It paid $0. Yeah. And I had a Dodge Neon, like a 1990 Dodge Neon or some.
Yeah, you did.
Shitty. I remember. Car. Yeah.
It was a Neon for sure.
And there was a girl in my class who would like ride out with. She didn't have a car, and so she was like, "Hey, can I ride with you?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, whatever." Like the company. And I'm pretty sure that Mike Patton slept with her.
Yeah, probably.
Pretty sure. Pretty Maybe. Sure. I'm not trying to fuck up his shit. I don't think he's fucking married anyway, but like Pretty sure he slept with her, and I think he, if my memory serves me correctly, he said something to me like, "Hey man, I think I slept with your girlfriend. I'm sorry." And I said, "I said, I don't have a girlfriend." And he said, he looked down and said, "Fuck, who did I sleep with?"
Nice.
Yeah, it just struck me as funny. And then Karen Black just kind of ran around and asked for makeup constantly.
Yeah.
So she was an interesting person.
Yeah. She was really pleasant to be around.
I don't want to speak ill of the dead because she has passed now, but I'm willing to speak ill of the dead. So I'm going to go and do that now. She was kind of a dick. I'm not going to lie.
Well, I mean, you know, she's old.
Right.
She was mistreated by Hollywood.
She absolutely was. She got treated like crap. Queen. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
She's still in some great movies. So, you know, more power to her. And rest in peace, Karen Black. Mike Patton is still alive.
Still weird as fuck.
And if he listens to this podcast.
Who doesn't?
You know, Mike, reach out to us and let me know who it was that you slept with, if anyone. Because I can't remember that girl's name. But, like,
maybe she was just fucking with you.
Maybe. I don't know. And I swear, like, I was in that one class with her. I gave her a ride to Wamego each way, like, a bunch of different times. And I still, for the life of me, can't remember her fucking name. I don't think we exchanged any contact information. Like, it was just this weird thing where, like, we drove,
Did you talk in the car?
Yeah, we talked the whole time each way. Like talked about music and politics and all kinds of shit. And
as you do.
Had some great conversations, but we just never took it to the next level of, hey, maybe we should hang out sometime, like outside of driving between Wamego and Kansas City for whatever reason. I don't know why. Yeah. It just kind of was just like, eh.
She probably hated you.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I was kind of a dick back then. While living at the Central House, I finished up my associate's degree at Kansas City, Kansas Community College, the best community college in all of Wyandotte County. And it's the only one,
it's the best and the worst.
It is. If anyone has ever seen the TV show Community, if you told me that that they based that on Kansas City, Kansas Community College, I would believe that. It was just
anyone checked to see where Dan Harmon went to community college at?
It was in Colorado somewhere, so unfortunately. Yeah.
You sure? Sure it wasn't
Kansas City, Kansas Community College?
Kansas City, Kansas Community College.
Could have been. Should have been. I finished up my degree there and went to do my one semester at UMKC, and that whole time was at the Central House. So I moved into the Central House, and pretty quickly after that, well, I got a job at Little Caesars out in Shawnee, Kansas. It's gone now, but there was a Little Caesars that used to be on Shawnee Mission Parkway in Quivira out in Johnson County. And I delivered for that Little Caesars. But I was just part-time and I was looking for something, one that was a little bit closer and something where I could work more than just like 20 hours a week. And that was when I think it was Ryan Folker actually who got me the job at Videomania. He was, said, "Hey, we're looking for somebody to work like..."
He work there?
Yeah. So I think they were looking for somebody to work like 30 hours a week there or something like that. And I was like, fuck yeah, I've always wanted to work at a video store. It's like, that was my dream job at the time. That's my dream job now. I would take that job right now if I could make a living working at a video store. They hired me and it was not even a whole block away from the Central House. I mean, it was... Mm-hmm. Down the street. It was such an easy commute. And I kept my job at Little Caesars. So, I worked like 30 hours a week at Videomania and like 15 to 20 at Little Caesars and kind of cobbled together a living like that. But considering my rent was less than $200 a month, it was fucking easy. I mean, usually I could just pay rent with my tips and All the other money was just spent on booze, mostly booze and records and video games and shit.
Yeah.
Squandering it away. That was what started the time at the Central House. And I've got a lot more stories to go into at Central House too. But if you want to talk a little bit about Wichita, we can kind of do a little back and forth, I guess, since we're separating our journeys right now.
Yeah. So I moved back home and moved in with my mom. My brother picked me up. I was horribly hungover from my last night in Lawrence. So he came pick me up. We drove home. I unpacked and felt like shit. And basically I didn't sleep for like 3 days because from alcohol withdrawal and like having DTs and shit. And so I moved home on a Saturday. By, I think it was Monday, I was like, I can't sleep. I feel like shit. Like, this fucking sucks. And so my mom made me a doctor's appointment, went to the doctor, got some meds, and got on antidepressants and shit like that. And that night, I was able to sleep and started feeling normal and basically, like, tried to get my life together. And when I first moved back, I hung out with Heather a lot. And we basically just hung out and watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And like, I tried to be normal. And Sean worked at a Vespa shop because that was the same time Vespa was making their US comeback, selling scooters again. And we had a Vespa shop in downtown Wichita. Sean worked out as a mechanic. So I hung out at the Vespa shop a lot. And Sean was also in a band called Soligette. Trying to describe it. Their guitar player, David, is a really, 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 really good guitar player. It was kind of jazz, indie rock, post rock type of thing. They were a three piece, drums, guitar, bass. And they had a standing gig every Monday night at the Shamrock. So I wound up going there like every Monday and watching them and playing pool and getting back into this scene in Wichita. And then I wound up getting a job. Aaron was a manager at Warehouse Music, which was a CD store. It used to be Blockbuster Music in Wichita on Kellogg and Woodlawn. And then changed to Warehouse Music. So I got a job there, and Aaron was my boss, kind of, and Heather worked there too. And our friend Josh, who wound up being the bass player, the other bass player in Spirit of the Stairs. So Aaron, Josh, and I worked at Warehouse Music together. We all were into the same kind of thing, and we decided to start a band, and that was Spirit of the Stairs. And when we first started, it was just Aaron, Josh, and I. So it was drums and two basses. And we were heavily influenced by like Sonic Youth, Trans Am, Mogwai type stuff. We didn't have vocals, we just played kind of noisy post-rock stuff. We all used a lot of effects pedals and started making music. And since Soligette had their standing gig at the Shamrock every Monday night, we started playing with them every Monday night. And that's about the time, well, back up, because we didn't start Spirit of the Stairs until February of 2003. So I started working at Warehouse Music in probably September. I moved back in July, so by September I was working there. And by October I was drinking again and getting blacked out drunk all the time and all that fun stuff. Justin's dad, Lee Shiny, had an art gallery next to the fish house, which for those that don't know, in Wichita, there was a group of artists that purchased a warehouse in downtown Wichita, called it the Fish House, and it, you know, downtown Wichita was basically abandoned at the time, so they converted this warehouse into an art gallery collective type thing. And then in the early 2000s, other people started moving in. Lee Shiny had a gallery there. There were some other galleries in there. And it started becoming like a cool place to hang out. So there was a venue there. There was a bar. There's a bar called John Barleycorn's, and they played shows. They had shows all the time. And so there was like a really healthy, good music scene going on in Wichita. I wasn't really a punk rock scene at all. It was more post-rock type stuff. Like, you had Soligette, and then Spirit of the Stairs started. There was another band called This Great October, who was also an instrumental band, that had Andy from Vent and Boxer Rebellion playing bass. Georgia was playing piano. Our other friend Aaron was playing drums. I don't know if you know Aaron or not, Aaron Mitchell. He played drums. And then our friend Chris played guitar. He was also in a band called Soma that was, I think, a Baltimore-based post-rock band. They were pretty big in the indie scene for a little while, late 90s, early 2000s, I think. So there was like this really cool post-rock scene here that we were a part of and helped build. There was another band called Ricky Fitz, who was closer to like math rock, screamo type stuff. There were, I don't know, it was fun. And Spirit of the Stairs wound up playing like, I don't know, at least a show a week. We played all the time. And then by April of 2003, the record store I worked at closed. I went and played a show, or the first Spirit of the Stairs show we played on my 25th birthday at the Shamrock, and my friend David was there, and he's like, I just opened a bar. You know, we took over this bar. It's a college bar called The Cedar. My brother and I just bought it, and we're getting started. If you need a job, why don't you come in? See what we can do. I was like, I've never been a server or bartender before, but I'd be super into it. So I went there, and basically the next day I got hired at the Cedar. And when I first got hired, it was just a beer bar, because it was like a college bar forever for a WSU. And they only served 3-2 beer, and they closed at midnight, and they served sandwiches. And it was like kind of a bro-y frat bar, kind of sports bar adjacent type thing. I don't know. It was very weird, very strange clientele. And it was located in like a really shitty neighborhood. But it was rad. And so I started working there. Heather started working there. A couple other cool people started working there. And we kind of turned it from a frat bar, WSU bar, into like a really chill place to hang out and drink and have fun. And we started having shows there. They got a full liquor license, so we were open until 2 and sold liquor, and it was just great. And it was really cool to be a part of that and help the music scene in Wichita for the time. I worked there for 3 years, and the music scene during that time was thriving. It was so good. That's when ICT Fest started. Dudes from Ricky Fitz started a all ages music festival called ICT Fest. There was an Eagles Lodge that we played at. Parrotfinalia hosted shows, stuff like that. And it was really, really fucking cool. Like, Wichita was a rad place at that time. Sean and Aaron and I all got a house together. It was a lot of fun. Turned into a very second and Estelle. It was hella fucking chaotic, though. Just wild times. Yeah, and that's, I mean, without going into too much detail right now, that's kind of where I wound up. I'm sure I have some stories to tell at some point, but that's the general timeline of what happened after I moved back for about the first year. And, you know, I immediately got back to, like, 3 months was the longest I'd ever been sober. And I lasted 3 months and started, you know, by having a beer here and there because I could handle it. And you know, quickly went to blacking out again, doing drugs again, and just being a complete fucking train wreck again. I never, like, I was in a bad way, but it wasn't as dark as it was in Kansas City and Lawrence. Like, my mood was never as dark. I didn't want to die like I did when I lived in Kansas City and Lawrence. So it was a little better, but it was still really bad.
You mentioned that was like a time when Wichita was kind of entering its kind of, well, renaissance for Wichita. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know we mentioned on the show before, when we left Wichita was just a shithole. Like, it was just...
Oh, it sucked.
There was nothing to do. Nothing was open past 6, 7 p.m. There was no really... I mean, I wasn't old enough to drink yet anyway, but there was no... There was a couple of good bars, maybe, but there weren't... And there was a few shows here and there, but... You know, nobody was coming through town. The only shows that you saw were the local shows, you know, or, you know, if you were really lucky, some band like Green Day would come through, but not any of the bands you really wanted to see. None of them went through Wichita, and it was just, I couldn't wait to leave. But I remember visiting you a couple of times, and yeah, like Wichita, just, I saw every time I went there, I saw, just massive improvements, and downtown's no longer like this abandoned, just like full of abandoned warehouses and parking garages.
Right.
There's actually stuff there now and art galleries. So,
The other cool thing that happened, in 2003 was, the Tallgrass Film Festival started, and that was really fucking cool. The first year I met the guy who started it at a bar, Kelly's. He and I just sat and talked about movies one night. And eventually he was like, "Hey, I'm starting a film festival here, a Tallgrass Film Festival. You should come." And, you know, a lot of it was at the Fish House, had a lot of events there and all sorts of stuff. And it was pretty low key that first year. And I, you know, walked around like I was a badass and just went wherever I want, acted like I belonged there. So I never got charged to go in anywhere. No one questioned my being at places. So I just kind of strolled into all the after parties and events at the film festival the first year. I don't think that year I met anybody super well known, but I wound up volunteering for the film festival for 9 years. I was a programmer, which means, you know, I watched 250, 300 movies and helped pick which ones to bring to town. And when they were here, you know, I introduced films, hosted Q&As and hung out with filmmakers and actors and all the people that would come to town for it. I met, Elliot Gould. He just had handlers that kind of turned him in a direction and he would walk that way and was kind of like wandering around with handlers. Gary Busey
went
to a hibachi restaurant with everyone and pulled a sword off the wall and started swinging it around like Gary Busey would do. scared a lot of people.
I would have been really disappointed if he just was really just normal.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be like, no, that would be so fucked too.
Met Jason Ritter.
Mm-hmm.
Met Philip Seymour Hoffman's brother, Gordy, mm-hmm. who was at a screening of, this is in 2009, so there was still like a, like anti-vaxxers were still taken somewhat seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a screening of that film, and he came up to me, and the filmmaker was a woman, fairly cute, I suppose. He asked me what I thought of it, and I was like, I think it's anti-science bullshit. And he was like, yeah, but she's pretty cute, isn't she? I was like, all right, man, go for it. I don't know if, did you ever see the movie Love, Liza?
Oh, yeah.
The Philip Seymour Hoffman movie where he huffs model boat or a mm-hmm. remote control boat fuel.
Yeah, I saw it like when it came out. I think I was working at the video store, honestly, when that came out, because that's probably where I got it from.
So that's his brother's movie. That's Gordy Hoffman's movie. He wrote and directed it.
Mm-hmm.
So, horribly depressing movie. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I remember it being really sad.
Philip Seymour Hoffman is amazing in it. He's addicted to huffing mm-hmm. gasoline, basically, because his wife committed suicide. And
mm-hmm.
he was too scared to read the note that she left him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really sad movie, but really good. You should watch it.
Yeah.
Everybody who listens, the tens of people that listen to our podcast, you should watch Love, Liza.
I remember liking it a lot when I watched it 20 years ago. So
yeah, it's been a long time since I watched it. The filmmakers of Blackfish. Mm-hmm. I met them. Manny is his name. And he heard the story about Crass making the fake phone call between Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan about Russia doing something. I don't remember what. He heard about that story and asked me about it, and he was briefly looking in, like considering making a documentary about that almost national crisis. That was cool to be a part of. Wichita's, I mean, I'm an old man now, so I don't go out too much. I don't know how cool it still is, but in the mid-aughts, it was really fucking rad place to be.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on. It felt really good to be a part of that scene at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Really similar to like the punk scene in Lawrence, but just completely different vibes. Like, you know, that was something interesting to be a part of as well. Up in Lawrence in Kansas City area, this was a similar feeling, similar sense of community, but just like different. There was very little politics involved. It was mostly just building a scene. I missed fucking Bobcat Goldthwait when he came to town for the festival.
We still got to hit up Bobcat Goldthwait though, because he's got to direct our 50 Shades of Gary.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
When we do more movie reviews, we have to do Shakes the Clown.
Yeah, for sure.
After all, it is the Citizen Kane of alcoholic clown movies.
That's so specific. I love it.
that was the tagline. I don't know if you remember any of the marketing for that. The tagline for the movie was, it's the Citizen Kane of alcoholic clown movies. And the bad guy.
Who could argue with that?
Yeah, who could? Who could? I don't know. Orson Welles?
Maybe. He's dead. And as we discussed earlier, we shall not speak ill of the dead. Except when we do.
Except when we do, right. Mm-hmm. So the antagonist, have you seen Shakes the Clown?
I don't think so, actually.
Okay. The antagonist of the movie, mm-hmm. the villain, is SpongeBob.
Oh, Tom Kenny.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's awesome. He's the antagonist. Yeah. It's like, if you don't know much about it, this is off on a fucking tangent, but who cares?
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, Bobcat Goldthwait's character is Shakes the Clown, and he is an alcoholic clown and is trying to get his shit together, trying to get a TV show, I think, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's just like a group of clowns, and they're, you know, there's two competing groups, kind of like West Side Story, only with clowns.
Sure.
That are drunk, yeah. You know, and they compete for, you know, supremacy. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fucking great. It's
yeah. great. Nice.
You really should watch it. And right. For those not in the know, Bobcat Goldthwait is punk as fuck.
And for anyone who doesn't know what West Side Story is, it's the Warriors. Yeah. It's like a worse version of the Warriors, yeah. But with music.
If you're listening to this, you should at least, I would expect you to at least have like some knowledge of punk rock.
Yeah.
And if you're unaware, there's a punk rock troupe called Schlong.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a record of the West Side Story called The Punk Side Story. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, all the music from West Side Story, only punk, and mm-hmm. it is just delightful. It's
good. I'll stuff. Send it to my wife too. My wife's actually a big West Side Story fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Schlong was part of the East Bay scene. Mm-hmm. It's like a bunch of East Bay musicians that
mm-hmm.
do.
Nice.
They do a lot of different stuff, but Punk Side mm-hmm. Story was one of my favorite things that they did.
Yeah. So yeah, you were doing the film festival stuff, and I was settling into the Central House around that same time. And the Central House, especially after I got my job at Videomania, every single night. Sometimes I'd work days at Videomania, but I closed it a couple of times too. And we closed at midnight. And I, you know, in Missouri bars close at, this is in Kansas City, Missouri. And in Missouri bars close at 3 instead of 2, or they mm-hmm. can stay open until 3 with mm-hmm. a special license. And there was this bar down the street called the Newsroom, that had that license so they could stay up until 3 a.m. And so every single night we'd close and I'd meet up with my roommates and the people I worked with, and we'd all go to the Newsroom and just drink ourselves stupid. We had about 3 hours to just get as drunk as we possibly could. So a lot of like double fisting and stuff like that.
So I'm pretty sure that when I came up there, we went to the Newsroom and we stayed well after 3
a.m. Yes. So
the bartender, allegedly.
Allegedly. The bartender, his name was John. Don't know his last name. Wouldn't say it even if I did. He was a guy named John. if he liked you, he wouldn't kick you out at 3. So mm-hmm. 3 would pass, and he'd kick a bunch of people out. And mm-hmm. people he liked, he would just keep serving you. The Newsroom always attracted just the most interesting people. It was on Broadway in Kansas City, Missouri. So, you know, it was... in a part of Kansas City that, you know, just attracted the weirdest fucking people walking by. And it was a bar that was on a busy street, in the middle of Midtown, just north of Westport. So that's the crowd it attracted. And there was just all kinds of weirdos. There was a guy who tried to pick a fight with me, while I was just sitting there. Like, I would think I was waiting for Joe and Nick and like maybe Ray, like I was waiting for people to come meet me there. And this guy was sitting next to me. And apparently I sat in the only open bar seat. There was one open bar stool and I went and sat on it. And apparently he had been hitting on the girl that was on the other side of me. I didn't know that. I just went and sat open seat. I'm going to order a beer. Mm-hmm. Cool. Right. He didn't like that. He thought that I was trying to, encroach on his territory. I mean, it's one of those, like, he sees her as something to be won or possessed, right. I guess. Yeah. And I'm just a bloke trying to get a beer. Like, I don't fucking give a shit what the fuck is going on. Like, but yeah, he looked over at me. He called me, the F slur multiple times. And he was like, hey, you're not going to sit there because "That ass," and he pointed at the woman sitting on the other side of me, "that's mine." and he kept calling me F slurs, and he threatened to kick my ass. So these bar stools were not, they were just regular bar stools. They weren't like attached to the ground or anything like that. They were just stools. You could pull them out, push them back in, whatever. And so I just kicked his bar stool as hard as I could, and it slid out from under him, and he smashed his face on the bar.
Nice.
The John who worked there, like, he looked over the bar, saw him on the ground, and like he just like pointed at these two guys, and they just dragged him onto the street. And he served me another beer. And I was like, okay. Like, never spoken of again. Like, I never saw that guy again. My friends showed up shortly after, so we went and played pool. Mm-hmm. Like, just reminiscing about that the other day, I was like, it was just an odd thing to happen. But
that's funny.
I'm glad I got out of having an actual fight with him. He was too drunk to fight anyway, so
yeah,
he was so really obviously just wasted.
One of the bars that we all hung out with in Wichita back then was Kelly's Irish pub, and we knew the owners, were friends with them. We were there every night and stuff. And I would play this game where, because I thought I was hot shit. I was in a band. I walked around town like I could do whatever I wanted, and people enabled my behavior. So I walked around like I was hot shit. So I liked to play a game where I would get somebody so angry they would want to fight me, and then turn it around so they would buy me a drink. So I would get to the point of almost fighting and then back it up so they would buy me a drink afterwards, because it was fun. It was a fun game. Aaron M is actually the one who initiated this, because he saw some of my interactions, and he was like, I noticed this thing you do. And I was like, well, I didn't know I was doing it, but now I do, so I'm going to try and do it more.
Mm-hmm.
So one time we were at Kelly's, and this dude came in, and he was with a girl, I don't know. He was trying to order a drink at the bar, and they weren't coming to him quick enough or whatever. And I was like, I raised my hand and got a drink before him because regular, they like me, and I didn't piss them off. And he yelled at them. He's like, hey, why'd you serve this F slur before me? And I was like, look, man, first of all, there's nothing wrong with being gay. Second, just because I dress better than your girlfriend and she wants to fuck me doesn't make me gay. Like, he immediately got pissed off and got in my face and tried, like, said he was gonna kick my ass or whatever. And I at the end, I got a drink from him, and I think he got kicked out actually for being an asshole later in the night. But was a fun game.
I used to go to a place called Kelly's in Norfolk too. The problem with a bar called Kelly's is everywhere has a fucking Kelly's. Yeah,
everywhere has a Kelly's.
Yeah.
Wichita doesn't have a Kelly's anymore because it closed down.
Yeah. I don't know if Kansas City does. Norfolk definitely does.
Kansas City did.
What's that?
For a while. Kansas City did for a while, and it was really bad.
Yeah, you went there with me a few times.
Yeah, and it sucked. I didn't like it.
It had the worst bathroom I have ever been in.
It did have that pizza place next to it, though.
Yeah.
That was one of the good things about Kansas City is there was pizza by the slice fucking everywhere.
Joe has a theory that basically any bar, unless it is specifically given some kind of other cultural identity, the default for all bars is Irish pub.
Yeah,
it's just like a default setting, especially in like Wichita, right. Kansas City, Chicago, places, the Midwest, basically.
Right.
So, yeah. And I think he might be right. I think it's just, and I think that Kelly's might be the default name if you can't think of another name. They're just going with the default settings of it's Kelly's, it's an Irish pub, whatever.
It just goes to show our complete lack of identifying culture.
Yeah.
Here.
Right.
I mean, other than Midwest, but I mean, what's that?
I knocked somebody out without throwing a single punch. which is great because it also marks one of the only times I've ever knocked someone out, like, in total.
Yeah.
I didn't even have to throw a punch, so that's good. I've been in several fights in my life, and I've lost probably more of them than I've won. I never pick fights. For some reason, fights get picked with me because I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time or just standing next to the wrong person.
Yeah. It's that ginger energy you give off.
Apparently.
It's like a beacon for violence.
It is. And for some reason, everybody thinks that I'm the one who's always like angry and picking fights. And I'm like, that feels like, can you be racist toward gingers? Is that a thing? Is that?
Look, it's like, just neck bone. It's a stereotype for a reason. All right.
It's so harassed.
I like that.
I don't know. It's not really racism, but it's in the same category of isms. I don't know. Yeah.
You're an oppressed people.
What's that?
You're an oppressed people.
I mean, I guess by white people standards. More so than like blondes and shit. I don't know.
Were you there the time I got Aaron punched in the face?
No, I don't think so.
It was at Kelly's again. And my brother was in town from Texas. And he's 20 years older than me. So he is, at the time, he's my age now.
Mm-hmm.
So he was 40-something, and I'm 20-something, like, running amok throughout Wichita. And he's in town for probably Thanksgiving or something. And we're all at Kelly's, just loaded. And it turns out some dude that used to hang out with the River City Skinheads was there. And River City Skinheads was the Hammerskin crew in Wichita back in the day. And somehow he heard us talking shit on Nazis and was like, yeah, I used to hang out with them, something blah, 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 blah. What, I don't know. We should get Aaron on here to tell the story because he was way more sober than I was. But we were like yelling at each other, and it was last call, and it was time to leave. And we'd been going back and forth for a long time. And we went outside, and he was walking to his car finally. Like Aaron was trying to mitigate the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And as he was leaving, I said something about his mom sucking my dick. And he just like ran back, and Aaron was so pissed. He's like, "Jared, shut the fuck up!" And then he pointed at the guy, and he's like, "You get out of here!" And then dude just fucking punched him in the jaw. Jesus. So I got Aaron punched for me having a big mouth. Especially back then, I was a fucking instigator and a shit talker.
Yeah,
like way more than I was in Lawrence. Like I took the level of shit talking that I did at Lawrence and like amped it up to like. Fucking 20. I was fucking shit. And you know, I was able to get away with shit because people let me. You know, like I hardly ever got challenged. I would get so drunk people would have to carry me home, and they would carry me home. So like there was no repercussions for me. So I just was a wastoid. I could be, because people let me.
I remember you trying to start shit all the time. I was always the opposite. I never wanted to start shit, but for some reason I would always end up in these like almost sitcom-esque situations where like you could have added a laugh track where like I'm just like just hanging out, just trying to have fun, like being smiley guy and like, ooh, this girl wants to make out. Hey, yeah, I'll make out with you. And then suddenly there's some giant man standing over me. It's like, that's my girlfriend, punk. And I'm like, whoa, what? That's always, or like, it was always like some bro trying to pick a fight with me because I was flirting with the wrong girl or just standing next to the wrong girl who he thought he had some possession over.
Right.
And okay, don't get me wrong. It's a scummy thing to do to make out with somebody's girlfriend, but also I didn't know that she was somebody's girlfriend,
right? And you were 20 or whatever.
Right, I was like 21, 22 or something. you know, but yeah, it was always like, for me, it was always some like some wacky zany reason why like somebody wanted to like kick my ass. And it's just mm-hmm. like wrong place, wrong time. Like, I don't know. Like I was like, I don't know, of our sitcom, I guess I was like the George Costanza where I'm just like, I'm just trying to live my life. Like, I keep having people want to kick my ass.
Who am I in this scenario, in this Seinfeld scenario?
I don't know. I wouldn't be so mean as to make you Jerry.
I mean, I think it's fairly obvious I would be Kramer.
I think you're Kramer, yeah.
Tall, goofy weirdo.
So yeah, I think I'll save the rest of my newsroom and Central House stories for episode 14. There's a lot of Central House that I haven't gotten into yet. Central, as you know, Central is a one-way street heading southbound toward Westport. And yeah. I'm not kidding. And BJ, if you listen to this, you can correct me, but I'm pretty sure I remember this pretty well. So BJ would always park his car right in front of the house when he'd come over. Mm-hmm. And there was a Walgreens up the street, but it was north of us.
Yeah.
But it was on 39th and Broadway. Uh-huh. Yeah, like a few blocks away, not that far. And I'm pretty sure that BJ would get in his car, drive south to Westport, turn right, then turn right again on Broadway and drive to the Walgreens to buy cigarettes, which one time I walked and I got there before him with him driving.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, if I remember correctly, he also drove like a grandma.
Yes, he did. And he would drive unnecessarily short distances.
Yeah.
And Joe got this is also like the 39th and Central corner. This is where Joe got spanged while he was walking by people in a car. So people in a car drove by, slowed down, rolled down their window and asked him for change.
Did you get any corrections or anything like
that? Oh, I do have one thing. So I know in the last episode I mentioned children's content creator, Miss Rachel. And I said, I didn't know that much about her, the charity that the conservatives are all super pissed about. So it's part of the Save the Children Fund. And I'm just going to read directly from her page. It says, Save the Children is gravely concerned for children in Syria, Turkey, Ukraine, Gaza, and around the world who might've been caught in the middle of natural disasters, armed conflict, and forced to flee their homes and exposed to injury, hunger, and sub-zero temperatures. So the part that the conservatives are really pissed off about is that she included Gaza in there. So
how dare she?
I know, right? So, if you are somebody who is in a position to be able to, you know, donate money, Save the Children is probably something to look into. I don't know that much about the charity. But on its face, it seems like probably a good thing.
So our friend Dave, gave us the name of the dude who lost his foot and kept it in a jar.
Oh, right.
He said the name of the kid who lost his foot and kept it in a jar was Zeke. He did indeed fuck with Lawrence High School kids by taking it out of the jar and shaking it at them.
Yeah.
So that is a accurate story that you had. I don't know shit about shit, but that is fucking bananas.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good story there.
Also, Zeke, if you listen to this by chance, reach out to us. So I don't know if you still have that foot in the jar.
And then a guy named Brent thanks us for creating the podcast. He says he's spending his Sunday listening, reminiscing about his younger years, going to and playing mini shows at G Coffee in the Pirate House. Such a great time and community to be involved with. You guys are fucking legendary for this. Thank you. So that's really sweet. I'm glad that people are enjoying it. So thanks for the email.
Yeah.
Thanks for sending that to us. That's really sweet. Thank you. And then we got another, John has a story about Johnny. So he was, this is from John. He's like, I don't think we ever interacted back in the day, but I'm 100% sure we were in the same spaces at times. I was a drummer of When Good Robots Go Bad. That name sounds familiar to me. I don't know.
Wait, did you say robots or go-bots?
Robots. When good robots, robots go bad.
Okay. Yeah. When good GoBots go bad can be the cover band for them.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I only had GoBots because I was poor. I couldn't afford Transformers.
I had
GoBots.
I had not even just the real GoBots. I had the off brand, the ones that had the GoBots label, but they weren't actually any GoBots you would see in the cartoon.
Didn't you get them from the dirt mole?
I got them from my grandma.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, most of them were guns. Because of course they were.
So John says one of his fondest Lawrence Casey punk memories was asking Johnny for a hit off of what I thought was a joint and turned out to be a hand-rolled cigarette. Johnny gave me shit for being a pothead, and then he goes, wait, and his tone got super serious. Do you listen to Dystopia? Because it's okay to smoke weed and listen to Dystopia. I lied and said yes, having never heard of Dystopia. I just wanted the older kid to think I was cool. So it's really funny to hear somebody refer to Johnny as the older kid.
The older kid.
He's like our little brother.
I still think of Johnny as being like 20 years old, even though he's in his 40s now.
Yeah, for sure. So he goes on. Johnny said, all right, and we drifted up to the band starting at the Pirate House. That weekend, I got my friend who had a computer to Napster Dystopia and burn me a CD. Changed my life, and I still listen to Dystopia on the regular. Thanks for unlocking that memory with the podcast.
Nice.
He did say that I could share that. So.
And nice callback to Napster. I forgot they existed.
Yeah, right. So thanks for writing those in and you know, corrections and all that stuff. I really like interacting with people, so send more messages and emails and stuff. Super rad to talk to people and hear from people.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep sending us messages, and keep spreading the word. Get people to listen if you can. And also don't forget to subscribe to our new, podcast, Punk Movie Review. We actually are going to have two come out back to back the week after this episode is released. So we're going to be doing Suburbia and Suburbia back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, one I remember being not good and one I remember being better.
I watched the trailers for both of them today.
Mm-hmm.
And I started having memories flood back about both of them. Mm-hmm. And I already know that Suburbia, the good Suburbia, is, I already know that it's going to make me cry. Cause I just remembered something about it as I watched the trailer and I was like,
Yeah.
So no spoilers for that 40 year old
movie. Right.
But if anyone who wants to listen to our punk movie reviews of Suburbia or Suburbia, they are both available on Tubi for free. So,
yeah. And, I'm not making new social media pages for that. So I'll post the episodes on our Facebook and Instagram pages.
Yes.
And
social
threads.
Media.
I don't really fuck with Twitter because we don't get any kind of interaction on Twitter.
It's like, do we even use our Twitter?
I tried for a little while, but stopped because we never got any kind of fucking interaction. So, you know, people interact with us on Instagram and threads and Facebook way more. So I'll just use that.
I'd prefer to never use Twitter now.
Yeah.
So that's fine. That's just fine with me.
Yeah.
So our social media, we'll have both podcasts using the same account for all those, but there, it does have Punk Movie Review has its own RSS feed. And it's going to have its own, it's its own entity on all the podcast sites on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all those. But you can still find it on the links on our website. And we also post it to our Facebook page every time new episodes come out. So it is super easy to find. And you can honestly just Google Punk Movie Review. And I think we're like one of the first ones that comes up Just look for our lovely faces.
And so our Facebook page, I don't think we ever talk about it really, but it's A Prairie Punk House Companion, which is the name of our podcast.
Right.
And on Instagram, it's prairie.punks, because it wouldn't let me do A Prairie Punk House Companion. Instagram is at prairie.punks.
Yeah.
P-U-N-X, by the way. Not P-U-N-K-S. I don't know what that would do.
Our website is www.prairiepunkpress.com, all one word. And you can find links to everything on our website.
Yeah. Do people go to websites anymore?
I don't know. Things? I do. But I think we're old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, we should make a Reddit page too.
Yeah. We probably should.
Make a subreddit or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared of Reddit though a little bit.
Yeah, it could be a pretty toxic place. I've been on a few Star Trek subreddits.
Oh yeah,
and it's some of that shit kind of scares you off from the fan base. I am a fan.
Yeah.
I'm a proud Trekkie. But Jesus Christ, man!
Fans are pretty awful though. Like,
yeah,
fans of things, they have a lot of passion, and it causes a lot of
mm-hmm.
unwarranted responses to things that don't really matter. I only go to Reddit for Monster Hunter video game stuff.
Oh, nice.
Hmm. Yeah, because I am that nerd. If anybody that listens to this also plays Monster Hunter, hit me up and we can play Monster Hunter together. I'm trying to get Neckbone here to get it. There's a new game coming out next year,
mm-hmm.
and if he gets it and we start playing, you may get some Monster Hunter punk rock streams. We'll see.
Yeah.
I have a streaming set up. I can do it.
Okay. I'll start playing it. I just finished Far Cry 5 recently, and now I'm playing Far Cry 6. So I've been on a Far Cry kick for some reason lately.
I have only played Far Cry 5. I didn't finish it just because it got tedious. It's a long ass game.
It's long. And Far Cry 6 is long too.
I'm like, if I see an icon on a screen, I have to go there and figure out what it is. So I get stuck doing all the side quests. So Far Cry is just a bit much. I did like the whole cult of it though. The whole cult of it all was a lot of fun. Right now I'm playing Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core, which is the side story about Zack, who Cloud kind of stole his persona from. I don't know how much you remember of Final Fantasy VII.
I used to play it a lot, but it's been a while. That was my go-to game in like the, what year was that, 97? 99. Was it? I thought it came out a little earlier than that.
It came out in 97. I played it a lot in 99.
Oh, okay. I played it when
I was in Kansas City by myself. That's what I did.
Because I started playing it a lot at Jason Dallas's house.
Yeah, because Aaron had it.
Yeah,
I don't know whose it was, but it was Aaron played it most of the time.
I think the PlayStation and the game were Aaron's, but for some reason they lived at Jason Dallas's house.
Well,
also, I think Aaron
lived
slept on his couch Jason's most of the time.
Do you remember Jason's shithead cat that he got?
Yeah.
That lived there?
Yeah.
That was a fucking terror.
That place was a dump, too. And it was really weird because you had to walk through his bedroom to get to the bathroom. I never cared for that.
Yeah. That was an awful situation.
If I crashed there, I'd just go piss outside.
Yeah.
It was easier.
Yeah. Instead of crashing there, I would just go to the Fannings because it was actually better.
There was Jason's. A few times where Aaron crashed on the couch and I slept on a sleeping bag on the floor and I just regretted it because I feel bugs crawl over me and shit. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Episode 13.
Thanks.
Like I said, look out for Punk Movie Review. That will be coming out 1 week after this comes out.
I'm going to go pee. I don't need more coffee though.
Oh, I don't need more coffee. I do have to walk my dog and go pee. So I'm going to go do that.
Yeah, you're late.
I am, yeah. Munchkin is in the other room, and he I can hear him heavy breathing, waiting. just waiting for me to come walk in.
I have to pee.
Bye.
Bye.